Welcome to Securing America with me, Frank Gaffney. This is a program that is a kind of, well, owner's manual for protecting the country we love against all enemies, foreign and domestic, to the glory of God and his kingdom. One of the regulars, I'm proud to say, of this program, who contributes mightily to its content as well as to the work of many of the organizations with which I'm affiliated, and I'm very happy to say he is notably a significant contributor to our Committee on the Present Danger, China's productivity, through webinars and through various other associated products. And we're going to be talking a good bit with him about the work of that committee and the problems that it is trying to address. The guest I'm speaking of, who has graciously agreed to give us a full hour of his time, a very special program indeed, is Charles Sam Faddis, a former Army officer and Judge Advocate General, a man who has gone on to serve in another capacity without a uniform, undercover for the Central Intelligence Agency for some 20 years in a lot of pretty unsavory places around the world. He has also been an Assistant Attorney General in Washington State, a candidate for Congress. He's prolific author and essayist, notably these days at andmagazine.com, at Substack, tremendous online resource. And in addition to all of that, he finds time to visit with us each week, for which, again, I'm very grateful. Sam, welcome back, sir. It's good to have you. And thank you for giving us an hour of your time.
Thank you, sir. Pleasure to be here, as always.
Great. Well, speaking of the Committee on the Present Danger, China, and webinars and your contributions to them, we did one this week that I wanted to call special attention to, Sam, and thank you for participating in it. It involves a thorny subject, one that Tucker Carlson actually brought up not once but twice with Donald Trump in the course of his interview with him as the other candidates for the Republican nomination were debating in Wisconsin. And that is the question of whether a civil war in the United States is in prospect. And what we looked at in that particular webinar, again, like all of them, it is available for free at presentdangerchina.org, and I especially commend this one to you, was the distinct possibility that what we've been witnessing is a series of provocations on the part of the Biden administration, perhaps calculated to precipitate some kind of response. But then there's this other Philip that I wanted you to address in particular, Sam, because you were one of those at nmagazine.com who called attention to it fairly early on. And that is the insinuation into our country of large numbers of Chinese nationals who seem to be potentially capable of doing some significant mayhem, not just mischief, but mayhem here. And might that fit into a plot to bring about a very, very repressive new order in this country as a crackdown precipitated by a series of events that might not have had anything to do with patriots, but that is nonetheless blamed on them? So there's the plot line. Tease it out for us, if you will, and give us your best professional judgment as to whether that's a distinct possibility at the moment.
Well, look, I think the one thing that you can say indisputably is that we have some very troubling things happen, right? We have what appear to be units of military-age Chinese males coming across the border, guys that somehow or another emerge out of the jungle where everybody else is either dead or about to die, and they're in good order, clean clothes and dry bags, moving along unfazed by all of this. People like Michael Yan, who's a special forces guy, say, "I feel like I'm back at Bragg." That's what I'm looking at. We got Chinese who somehow...
And just translate that into layman's language. If you're at Fort Bragg, what were you looking at?
So, you know, he feels like he's looking at American special forces personnel. He's looking at guys that are trained in unconventional warfare, but are fit and psychologically, mentally prepared. So this is a really troubling thing. We've got Chinese who show up in the Bahamas which is, by the way, not an inexpensive trip to get to the Bahamas, and then somehow have the financial resources to buy boats. And I'm not talking rowboats. We're talking, you know, cabin cruisers. And then navigate somehow from the Bahamas to specific locations on the Florida coast. So they got the money, they got the training, the resources, the know-how, the navigational skills to come ashore. And indisputably what we can say, I mean, is nobody's making any effort to determine what this is and what this means. It's sort of like, yeah, there could be teams of saboteurs landing on the coast of Florida and walking across the Texas-Mexico border. Okay, nothing to see here, guys. Move on. In the context, you know, you're sort of like, okay, so is this really just abject, grotesque incompetence on the part of every government agency involved? They can't figure out that maybe they should investigate this? Or are we deliberately looking the other way and allowing these folks to penetrate the interior of the country? And given this stuff that we've seen, this is another one of those plot lines you and I talk about all the time. You fed this to me 5 years ago. I tell you, this is the plot of a bad novel nobody will buy. In the current environment, we can't say that anymore, right? The unthinkable is now we know to be true. So again, the one thing that's indisputable here is nobody's making any effort to run it down. And by the way, I mean, how hard is that? You have the Chinese guys in custody. You are holding them. Why are you releasing them into the interior? Why are you letting them continue? Why aren't you holding them and investigating this and running it to ground?
Yeah. Well, Sam, let me ask you about that, because my impression is that, like most of these illegal immigrants, they're not actually being held. Maybe there's a sort of pro forma processing that just moves them through the border, but that in fact, worse in a way than all of that is the fact that they were providing ferry service to them, as we do with these other illegals, all over the country. So if you're right, and you know, the thing that I prize about your inputs to these conversations is you actually have some deep knowledge of operations. When you get these kinds of people doing these kinds of things inside a country like ours, and we're helping them get everywhere they want to go, no good can come of that. And usually at about this point in the conversation, you make reference to specifically whose job it is to try to monitor and prevent this kind of thing from happening here. That would be a three-letter agency starting with F. Where is the FBI?
Well, exactly. They are legally the number one counterintelligence agency. This is a counterintelligence threat. You are absolutely right. They're not actually holding them for any substantial period of time. I guess my point is they have the capacity to do so. And in a situation like this, you don't surmise. I mean, I've been in this world for a long time. I got you. I don't know what's going on. This smells really bad. You're not going anywhere, buddy, until we run this to ground. You showed up in the Bahamas and you had $100,000, $200,000 to buy a boat, but you're supposed to be an unemployed factory worker fleeing a depression in China. That doesn't work for me. Let's go for the next explanation. What's going on, man?
Right.
Nobody's doing it.
Who are you and who are you working for and why are you here are just the kinds of obvious questions. And I think to your earlier point, this isn't incompetence that those are not being asked. This has to be policy. Sam, we have to take a short break. We'll be right back with more with the great Sam Faddis right after this. This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. The Senate's recess is over, and its agenda includes the nomination of General C.Q. Brown to be America's top military officer. Here are five reasons he should be rejected. First, with him as the Air Force's chief of staff, its strength has declined from marginal to very weak. Grounds for termination, not promotion. Second, General Brown embraces the cultural Marxist agenda of critical race theory and diversity, equity, and inclusion. It's destroying America's armed forces. Third, on his watch, the Air Force Academy has indoctrinated his service's future leaders with that anti-American, racist, and divisive ideology. Fourth, General Brown is a former fighter pilot, but not the warrior commander we need at the moment. And fifth, that's imperative because Communist China is preparing for war. Our troops must do the same, starting with the rejection of General Brown. Tell your senators, reject GeneralBrown.org. This is Frank Gaffney. We're back, and I'm pleased to say we are continuing for this full hour with Charles Sam Faddis, one of our favorite guests, one of our most indispensable, well, sanity checkers, among other things, when we look at some seemingly inexplicable things, including what we've just been discussing, which is the policy, evidently, that is enabling Chinese nationals who are unaccompanied, military-age men, fit, seemingly well-equipped, migrating through our southern border in large numbers, or perhaps coming in from the Bahamas in boats, what have you. And Sam, I guess the real question is not only why is this policy being pursued, but what could come of it? And this brings me back to the webinar that we did this week. The thesis, again, is if you're the Biden administration and you want to precipitate arrangements, shall we say, that fundamentally transform this country into one in which you are essentially an unchecked dictatorship. Mm-hmm. Creating conditions under which you have people, angry at you, restive, shall we say, but not violent, not responding violently, but you want to set them up to make it look like they did so you can crack down on them. What role might Chinese saboteurs, special operators, what have you, play in pulling this off?
Well, what you've done here, I think, with the policies of the Biden administration, what they continue to do, is basically turn the whole country into tinder, right? Into dry tinder waiting for a spark to go up.
Now, a particularly apt metaphor at a moment when every place seems to be bursting into flames Canada to Maui.
Putting on for a moment my hat of being as involved as I am with Pennsylvania politics at the grassroots level. Again, there is no domestic violent extremist movement that I can detect, and I spend a huge portion of my life now running around talking to people at the grassroots level. But what is there? There's incredible frustration, incredible anger, and real economic privation, right? I mean, folks who can't fill their pickup trucks, can't pay their rent, are almost unable to put groceries on the table, and an administration that just keeps not only not trying to help them, but denying that any of it exists, and then doubling down on the policies that are creating. So you got this pressure cooker situation. Now you introduce the possibility that you're going to have sabotage teams take down power grids, take out things, and then who knows what other element, false flag, blame that on people, blow up. You're not only causing additional harm to the people, but now we're what? We're going to blow up, say, transformers and take down the grid, and we're going to blame this now on some fictitious domestic extremist group. Oh, my God. I mean, it is the official position of the American government right now that the number one terrorist threat is domestic violent extremists, by which they mean anybody who opposes Joe Biden. That is their official position, despite the fact that I don't see any evidence of such a thing, but that they've already stated that that's the case.
Yeah. And actually gone so far as to label specific populations as elements of that, that mix. I mean, everybody from MAGA to traditional Catholics to parents complaining about what's going on in their schools. I mean, there's now a whole litany of people who would presumably be fingered in short order. Absolutely. If something went sideways, right?
Yes. Well, look, for instance, Southern Poverty Law Center came out with a list not too long ago, as they do periodically, naming by name domestic violent extremist groups. So let's just call it what it is. They're saying these are terrorist organizations within the United States. And we know that the U.S. government actually just picked up that list from the Southern Poverty Law Center and incorporated it. The Department of Homeland Security just accepted SPLC's list and said, yeah, this is the list of terrorists. Okay, I know the leaders of many of those organizations in Pennsylvania. You're talking about the average stereotypical person is a 55-year-old mom whose crime is that she doesn't want her kid to have access to pornography in the school library. And certainly,
or have their genders changed unbeknownst to the parent.
And without her knowledge, right? That's her crime. I mean, literally, you're talking about 55-year-old moms, the stereotypical member. The official policy of the Biden administration is to paint this picture that these are a bunch of bandolier-wearing desperados out there in the mountains getting ready to blow things up. It's absurd. And yet, that's their official position.
Well, and the thing that is so alarming about this, and, you know, people could listen to this and say, well, you know, you guys are just off on a toot. That's what happened in January 6th.
Yes.
You had precisely people fitting that profile. They're peacefully demonstrating with Donald Trump, who have now been, in some cases, spending hard time in jail and looking at the prospect of a longer time indeed. And the explanation for how that all eventuated, I think, strikes me, and I'd like your judgment on this too, Sam, as pretty much a false flag operation.
Without question, I think there are elements of that. I think there are also elements of just complete fabrication and falsehood in the official narrative. I mean, look, I was down on the mall on January 6th, standing near the Washington Monument with about 500,000 other people. I didn't see any explosive devices, pitchforks, torches, AK-47s. I saw mostly a middle-aged crowd angry about what they regarded, I think, legitimately as a stolen election. I was standing most of that time with a group with a flag that said Iranian Americans for Trump. They were a violent group, I could tell you. A bunch of basically people that fled oppression in Tehran, who love their country and democracy and free enterprise. Wow.
And understand better than most of us do, quite frankly, how perishable freedom is and how close we are to losing it at the hands of the kind of people we've just been talking about. So, Sam, just to put a bow on this, we'll move on to some other topics. We're at a moment where, as James Lindsley said, and I was very proud to have him participating in this program, faced with these kinds of circumstances, perhaps the single most important thing you can do is warn people that this is what may be afoot, which is the point of this webinar and really all of our webinars. Just your thoughts on that subject, sir.
Well, absolutely. Look, unfortunately, there are a lot of Americans that still kind of just don't want to face the reality of what's going on around them. It's painful. It's horrifying. It's hard to comprehend. It's easier to kind of
scary.
Stop listening to the news and just hope for the best and tune it out. And that's the worst thing you could do, honestly, is just let these people steal your democracy.
And in the process, perhaps fundamentally transform the country, as Barack Obama promised they would do, for your children and your children's children and for all time, perhaps, rendering it someplace that is unrecognizable to those of us who have had the privilege of living in a free America. And Ronald Reagan warned that if we didn't fight for that freedom, peacefully in this case, I think is the operative word, we will tell our children and our children's children what it was like to live in America when men were free. Sam, we'll take a short break. We'll be right back with more with Sam Faddis right after this.
Night after night in cities across the country, black garbed assailants clash with police in the streets, smash windows, and throw Molotov cocktails in an effort to destroy police stations, federal courthouses, and local businesses, all in the name of anti-fascism. Most Americans are now, sadly, all too aware of the movement known as Antifa. But where did they come from? What do they want? And how do we stop their campaign of violent mayhem? The Center for Security Policy Press is proud to present Unmasking Antifa, Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat. This new book looks at the history, ideology, organization, finances, and strategy of Antifa, and provides an in-depth analysis for law enforcement officers, policymakers, and the general public. From street fighting tactics of the Black Bloc to fundraising by prominent left-wing foundations, Unmasking Antifa is the go-to guide to understand this elusive and dangerous threat. Get your copy of Unmasking Antifa, Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat at Amazon.com.
We're back, and we're continuing this extraordinarily important conversation with one of our most valued resources here at Securing America, Sam Faddis, with andmagazine.com. If you are not a subscriber, as I am, to his important work there at Substack, you're missing a lot, and you need to remedy that right away. Sam, we've been talking about enemies, foreign, in domestic circumstances. One of them, as it happens, incredibly, was the subject of an article that you wrote the other day. Tell us about an individual who was being feted by one of the most important of our military commands, and what on earth it portends.
You know, Frank, it seems this is one of those stories. I'm laughing not because it's funny, but because it is incredible. I mean, as I hear myself talking about it, I'm almost like, seriously, this can't be true, right? We're in this world now where this seems like every day something like this happens. So the U.S. Strategic Command had a symposium out in Omaha, Nebraska, 2 weeks ago. Huge thing, DOD-sponsored official event. They've got speakers. They've got folks coming in from all over. This is a big deal. And the keynote speaker,
what was the subject? It was, you know, it's sort
supposed
of strategic
to be US
threat.
Defense policy, how to keep the United States safe, all the critical issues, you know, keeping Americans safe in their beds at night, this kind of stuff. So the keynote speaker for this DOD event, this huge, very important symposium, the keynote speaker is a guy, Dr. Mousavian, who was introduced by as like a national security and geopolitical expert. In fact, I encourage people to watch the YouTube video of the introduction and his entire speech, which is linked to in our article at Ann Banks, because the lady who introduces him is just gushing all over herself at the privilege of introducing this august personage. Okay, Mousavian is an Iranian, and he's a terrorist. Sorry, he's a terrorist. So the keynote speaker for the DOD's U.S. Strategic Command Symposium is a terrorist. And he's not a terrorist.
A terrorist as in somebody who's hostile to the United States, and he's keynoting this address about how to keep Americans safe.
The United States has been involved in killing Iranian dissidents. This guy's got blood all over his hands. So
possibly American blood, even?
100%. So this guy is not there as like a terrorist who has, you know, recanted his previous beliefs and is now there to educate you and help you defeat his former colleagues. Completely unrepentant, unreformed. And he gets up and he lectures everybody about the evils of American policy in the Middle East. Along the way, he attacks Donald Trump for daring to have General Soleimani killed, who was the head of the IRGC Quds Force, and probably the biggest terrorist on the planet. By the way, Soleimani, personally responsible for the technology, these improvised explosive devices used against American troops, for instance, in Iraq and Afghanistan, that I think the best estimates are killed at least 500 of our soldiers. So Mousavian is...
And maimed and wounded grievously countless others as well, right?
Where I live in Pennsylvania, the first row of parking spots at every major, you know, Home Depot, Lowe's, whatever, is Purple Heart recipients, not handicapped. And you can't drive around the area without seeing guys missing usually legs, sometimes arms. Yeah, that's what this is. Soleimani was responsible. Donald Trump gave the order to have him killed. Banner Day.
On his way to do some more killing of Americans, as I recall.
On the ground in Iraq, on his way to, in the midst of an operation to kill more Americans. There's this guy, Mousavian, at the podium, on stage, at a DOD-sponsored event, talking about how evil Trump is for having this great man Soleimani killed.
My head is exploding, Sam, I gotta tell you. And unfortunately, this is not a one-off. I mean, the treatment of Iranians by this administration has been rife with examples of appeasing and, in fact, empowering these guys. And you know better than anybody, Sam. I mean, you've lived and worked among enemies of our country for a lot of your life. And you know what this breeds. Contempt. And yes. What does contempt on the part of enemies typically result in, sir?
Yeah, well, we're talking about getting people killed in large numbers, right? When we ran ops on the ground, I was talking to a junior officer, particularly working against people like the Iranians, I would say, you know, at the end of the day, you want your source or the people you're dealing with to hopefully like you and be connected to you, yada, yada. At the end of the day, if he is not more afraid of you than anybody else on the planet, you're just waiting to die. You're in a vicious world and you better get to come to terms with it. That's who these guys are. Look, this administration is, they've not just lost their way with the Iranians. That they are on the other side. They just released billions of dollars to the Iranians. Estimates are the Iranians...
Billions more dollars on top of what on their previous 1.0 and 2.0 Obama-Biden administrations gave them.
This is an almost endless stream. But let's keep in mind, by the way, that the guy who was our special envoy carrying on really unclear and unspecified backdoor negotiations with the Iranians that this administration won't even tell Congress about, was relieved of his duties, right? Because apparently he'd been passing classified information to the Iranians. The official Iranian press the other day published, so this guy Mali was given an official notice by the State Department saying, based on these allegations, these crimes, your security clearance has been pulled and you're basically on administrative leave, and included mishandling classified information, yada, yada. Okay, that official internal classified document from the Department of State was published by the Iranians.
You can't make this stuff up.
Mali's apparently passing to them, not just classified, but now the classified notice that he's in trouble for passing classified. And the Iranians are so brazen, they're publishing this.
Yeah. Now, we, in fairness, we don't know that Rob Malley passed him the memo about his security clearance. But it does fit the profile. And more to the point, what you're really conveying here, Sam, is this is a guy who exemplifies the policy approach. Not only was promulgating it, of course, but epitomizes the daftness at best, and at worst, the treasonous qualities of this administration's policy. And sadly, it's not confined to Iran. As you know, it's much in evidence with respect to China, and one could argue, you know, other bad guys around the planet. And I guess the thing that is just so stunning about this, and I did want to make sure that we talk about the U.S. military in a little bit more detail, because what is being done by people in uniform, following orders from civilians, to be sure, to some extent, but also, it now appears, as a result of their own ideological, you know, inclinations, as well as their perception of what will get them promoted if they play ball. And the poster child of all of this is a fellow by the name of General C.Q. Brown, United States Air Force Chief of Staff at the moment, but the nominee of Joe Biden to become the next chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the nation's top military officer. What can you share with us about who this guy is and the advisability of having him be, you know, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff?
Well, it's a terrible idea. There's no way on earth the guy should be confirmed, right? I mean, this is a guy who looks at, again, I've said this to you before, you know, it makes me sick, honestly, coming out of a military family, having worn the uniform, et cetera. The world's greatest meritocracy, you don't see color. You don't care the ethnicity of the guy next to you. He's your brother. She's your sister. And now we're tribalizing the U.S. military. And Brown talks in those terms, right? We have too many white pilots. When did that become a consideration? Whether they're white, brown, black, male, female. It's only one thing that matters. Who are the best pilots? If they're all white, if they're all black, if they're all brown, who cares? That's the whole point. Yet this guy is literally, and that address he gave in Korea a number of years ago when he took over the Air Force Command, where he's talking directly to those airmen in a hall and basically telling them, you need to look around the hall and see not fellow airmen, but white guys, black guys, brown guys, men, women, gay, straight.
This is cultural Marxism. I mean, they call it woke, but let's call it what it actually is, Sam. And why it is so frightening, really, is it's about fracturing our military. As you know, with your help, we put together this book, The Indictment. The seventh charge in the indictment is the takedown of the United States military.
Yes.
By design. By the Biden administration, by the Obama Biden administration. And Sam, we have to take another break. When we come back, I just want to explore a little bit further what the implications are for the military of the United States and for the security of its people if we allow this wrecking operation to run its course. We'll be right back with more right after this. This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. The Senate's recess is over, and its agenda includes the nomination of General C.Q. Brown to be America's top military officer. Here are five reasons he should be rejected. First, with him as the Air Force's chief of staff, its strength has declined from marginal to very weak. Grounds for termination, not promotion. Second, General Brown embraces the cultural Marxist agenda of critical race theory and diversity, equity, and inclusion. It's destroying America's armed forces. Third, on his watch, the Air Force Academy has indoctrinated his service's future leaders with that anti-American, racist, and divisive ideology. Fourth, General Brown is a former fighter pilot, but not the warrior commander we need at the moment. And fifth, that's imperative because Communist China is preparing for war. Our troops must do the same, starting with the rejection of General Brown. Tell your senators. Reject GeneralBrown.org. This is Frank Gaffney. We're back, and we're continuing this conversation, which I must tell you is the highlight of my week, for sure, with Charles Sampatis, a former undercover operative of the Central Intelligence Agency, but also a former Army officer of some distinction, and a man who comes from a family of military personnel, and like a lot of people in this country, it is typically military families that produce military personnel. And Sam, as you know, a lot of those folks aren't showing up at the moment to volunteer to serve, as has traditionally been the case. I'm told that this is especially true of Southern white males who have long been an incredibly important part of an all-volunteer force. Do you think this might have something to do with the policies that they're seeing promulgated, yes, by the civilians, but now being embraced? You were talking a bit there about a speech that C.Q. Brown, the guy they want to be the top military guy in the entire armed forces, gave telling airmen that, you know, your services really are no longer needed, I think, as much as that you ought to be looking to those white supremacists if you're black, and you look at those, you know, permanent victims if you're white, and on and on. I mean, just walk us through, as a guy who has actually seen the importance of unit cohesion, you've seen what it means on the battlefield, among other places, to be able to have confidence in the guy next to you, that he will die for you just as you will die for him. What does critical race theory contribute to all of that?
Well, it's like matter and antimatter, isn't it? Unit cohesion you get down to the level of a team on the ground, a squad of it, whatever we're talking about. Why do people fight, die, endure all this hardship? Okay. It gets translated. I mean, do they believe in the country, patriotism? Of course they do. Otherwise, they wouldn't have enlisted. But ultimately, it comes down to the fact that it is the guy next to you. Maybe that sounds trite. Maybe if you haven't been there, you don't get that. But that's what it's all about, right? It's not because the lieutenant's going to yell at you, or because the lieutenant scares you more than the enemy that is getting ready to overrun your position. It's that cohesion that is instilled. Nope, I'm not letting you down. You won't let me down. We're not leaving a man behind. And you hear that, but I mean, if you haven't lived it, maybe it's a little hard to understand, but that's it, man. That's what it's all about. And ultimately on the battlefield, it isn't super cool technology or all this other stuff. That's the fighting spirit of the American military. So,
which has served not only the military, of course, but the people of the United States well for generation upon generation upon generation.
Yeah, look, I would submit to you, we have been in conflicts where we have made a policy decision we were going to disengage, right, wrong, indifferent. Vietnam, Afghanistan. I would defy you to find an instance in which the American military for a very long time has actually been defeated on the battlefield by an enemy. Our policymakers have failed us, but our troops don't lose. That's the bottom line. They do not lose. Now, this ideology we're talking about, which you're absolutely right in defining as Marxism, which is based on division, it goes to the heart of that, right? It destroys that. By design, absolutely, you are going to it. If you read about the Russian Revolution and when it, you know, sort of, it's not a single event, but, you know, 1917 onward and the struggle, the Civil War and all of that. I mean, where did the Marxists go at the heart of that gaining power? It was going into the Russian military and dividing it, tribalizing it, and converting entire elements of it to the point where troops in Russian units began to wear red ribbons on their lapels to symbolize, I'm with those guys, I'm with the Bolsheviks, I'm with the communists. So,
and not least, Sam, one other element of this was institutionalizing the ideology by having political commissars insinuated into the ranks and having a command structure that essentially ensured that they would be able to assure compliance with that ideology. Could you go so far as to say that seems to be what's happening inside the United States military
today?
Don't
we have a commissar in DOD now, Harrison Bishop, with his whole deal? Look, we had a female general back a couple of months ago. It's another thing we wrote about at Ann Magazine, who gets up at another big DOD-sponsored event. She's talking about gender equality and transgender issues, having absolutely no idea what that has to do with war fighting. And she begins to attack and lecture state legislators and state legislatures around the country. So here's a uniformed officer, senior, who by definition, by the way, it's illegal for her to be saying this in uniform in an official capacity, but she's decided she has the right to tell democratically elected state legislatures that they're out of step with the correct ideology. And no consequences. She wasn't removed. She wasn't disciplined.
I think this has to do with abortion specifically, as I recall. But Sam, and I just want to do a shout out right here, right now, to Senator Tommy Tuberville of Alabama, who has taken point. First, starting with this whole idea that we will have federally funded involvement with abortions, which is illegal, actually. But now understanding that what is really going on here, of which this is a manifestation, is that larger cultural Marxist takedown of the United States military. And he is holding up promotions for several hundred individuals, including C.Q. Brown, over his determination to prevent that from happening, that Marxist takeover, takedown, however you want to describe it. And God bless him for doing it. And I think he deserves our strong support. And I appreciate 100%. The chance to say that with you on air. Sam, a last break. We'll be right back with more with the great Sam Faddis. Stay tuned right after this. We're back for the final installment of this very special conversation with one of our most distinguished and valued colleagues, Sam Faddis, member of our Committee on the Present Danger China, contributor to our Save America's Military Coalition, and so much more. And Sam, I did want to ask you about one other thing. You've been working with us on the Sovereignty Coalition as well. It now is unmistakable that among the other wrecking operations, some of which we've covered here nicely, the Biden administration is determined to take us back into some form or fashion of pandemic, well, 2.0. We're talking about mask mandates coming back. We're talking about new jabs that are in the works. The president, as I understand it, has actually talked about a new one that's going to be mandatory, that everybody's going to have to take. The lockdowns can't be far behind, can they? And what is afoot here, sir? And where do you think it leads?
What's afoot, I think, is what everybody suspects is afoot, right? This is a big motivation here, I think, is the idea that this will provide the opportunity once again to mess with elections, to influence elections, to distort those results. It also just facilitates a whole series of other control mechanisms.
Can I just ask you to pause and drill down just a little bit further? Because as you said earlier, you have been working tirelessly in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, trying to unscramble the eggs that were scrambled in the first pandemic on the election integrity thing. And just why this reprise is so dangerous based on how hard it's proven to be to fix the problems that manifested themselves that first time around.
Look, I think people that don't really pay attention to the details of this, who want to just blow off all concerns about mail-in voting, for instance, just kind of sort of rely upon the assumption that, okay, there are security measures in place and they know where these ballots are coming from and it's all good. And there's not really any significant potential for fraud, again, without ever bothering to look at the details or making the time to look at the details. Okay, not true at all. I mean, we could talk about this for hours. But for instance, in the state of Pennsylvania, back in the last presidential election, under the pretext of COVID and all sorts of issues, those security measures that did exist for mail-in voting, and they were few because mail-in voting itself was shoved through at the last moment, were basically then winked out of existence under the pretext that somehow or another there was a health emergency. So for instance, you kind of need a postmark on your mail-in ballot, so we're sure you mailed your ballot before the election results were announced, not after. Like after the fourth quarter's over, you're not allowed to score more points. Under the pretext of COVID and all kinds of complicated issues, at some point the Pennsylvania Supreme Court said, it doesn't matter if there's a postmark, presume it was mailed before the election. So now you get to watch for the results, throw as many more ballots as you want in the mail. At some point, the court said, stop taking them to the post office where they actually do get postmarked. Take them out of the mailboxes, this is to the U.S. Postal Service, and drive them straight to the counting room, skipping the part where they get postmarked. So now we've not only don't care what the postmark said, we've taken postmarks out. Signature requirements, again, were winked out of existence. I don't know why COVID means you can't sign your ballot. But anyway, on down the list. So pretty soon you have no safeguards at all.
Right. And this is where we will find ourselves again if they have the pretext again.
Yeah. And look, let's think about factually what we know now. First of all, vaccines. Okay, let's put aside medical issues, which are substantial. Vaccines obviously don't work. Everybody you know that's had the vaccine is now getting COVID for the fourth time. I think that's a pretty big lab test we did on the whole country. At a minimum, they don't work. So I don't know why we need more. Masks. There have been multiple studies now that demonstrate masks and lockdowns never had any positive impact on controlling COVID. They did cause a lot of psychological harm, particularly for kids, definitively established by studies all over the world. studies in Germany and Sweden that have our own health authorities don't want to talk about it, but the Germans and the Swedes have done massive studies and announced basically there's no evidence a single child in our countries ever died of COVID. It poses no risk to kids. So now we're talking about masking little kids again, knowing the psychological impact, knowing it has no benefit, knowing they're not at risk, and then making them take a vaccine that at best does nothing.
At best does nothing, and in fact seems increasingly, yes, obviously, to do, yes, a lot of harm, especially, yes, to people who aren't at risk in the first place. So, Sam, are you telling us that you anticipate, whether it's for the purposes of stealing another election or whether it's for the purposes of control, and you say that's also at work, yeah, here, that this is now heading our way? And if so, what do you counsel we do?
Well, I think it is already happening. There's no question it's already happening. We already have colleges announcing you have to mask on campus and all of this other madness ginning up. I'm afraid that where we are is we're at the point where the only possible response is I will not comply, because our legislators appear to be incapable or unwilling of standing up and doing anything. I mean, I think you're at the point where you're just going to have to say, I'm not putting on my mask to walk into your supermarket. My kid's not wearing the mask. And we're going to have to do that across the board.
And so this is peaceful civil disobedience, basically, peaceful, on a mass scale.
This is the Rosa Parks solution to move to the back of the bus in Montgomery, Alabama. No, I'm not moving. Do your worst.
Sam, this is such an important and I think really needed recommendation, and I hope that it will be embraced by all of us now, because the lesson of the past pandemic is it doesn't get better if you go along and comply. I can't tell you how much I appreciate the chance to visit with you at length, Sam Faddis. This was one of my best interviews ever. I so appreciate you and look forward to visiting with you again next week. In the meantime, stay well, my friend, and thanks for what you do at nmagazine.com. Thanks to all of you for being with us. I hope you'll do so again next time, and that in the meantime, you will go forth and multiply.